Welcome, everybody, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. Thanks to, once again for the download and joining us at baseballamerica.com or on iTunes. I want to remind you this Baseball America College podcast is sponsored by ATEC, the baseball training machine company. At ATEC, we're committed to delivering tools to coaches to help train and develop players. Visit ATECsports.com to learn about training machines that can help make your practice more effective and efficient. See training tips and practice drills from Vanderbilt coach Tim Corbin and more on ATECsports.com. ATEC, win every practice. Dramatic pause there for Vanderbilt coach Tim Corbin. Aaron, we'll talk a little bit about Vanderbilt and the Southeastern Conference in this edition of the podcast. Also going to talk a little bit more mid-major this week as most conferences around the country have started their conference play, the Big West being one of the prominent exceptions. But Aaron, let's start off at the top. Big series, obviously, this weekend, North Carolina. We had South Carolina and Florida. Top-ranked Gators go to Columbia to play the two-time defending national champions, a rematch of last year's national championship series, the College World Series finals. And after losing the game Thursday that I was at, the Gators rallied to win the series on the road. And I guess when it's all said and done, Aaron, that's kind of what we expected. The number one team in the country, you kind of do expect to go on the road, even against a team that was at the time ranked sixth. You expect them to win two out of three. You don't expect a sweep, but kind of Florida kind of is who we thought they were. They're really, really good.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. And I agree. I mean, I thought they would win two out of three. And, you know, even after they lost that first game, as you wrote, John, on the college blog, since you were down there in Columbia, you wrote that it had that feel. It felt like being back in Omaha. And, you know, you've got Michael Roth and Matt Price doing their thing, and Price back in the bullpen where he belongs, closing it out. And, you know, they won that game, you know, pretty convincingly in the final innings there, 9-3. They broke it open a little bit. And, you know, and that was a big win for South Carolina. But Florida, you know, I think it shows you that this team is experienced. They're not just, you know, we've talked about this so many times, but they're not just a bunch of prospects. They're winning ball players, and they responded, you know, as you expect them to. And you know, it's obviously it's a big series win, but you know, Florida's rolling right now.
Let's take both these programs going forward. These two teams, I should say, are going forward. First, the South Carolina side of it. Clearly some issues in their pitching staff. I think we both agree that Matt Price in the bullpen makes sense for that club. Forrest Kumas, you wrote about his velocity being down. I think it had been, talking to Ray Tanner pregame Thursday, it sounded like his velocity had been better on Sunday in the last game of their previous series. Maybe it was Monday. You know, I forget. It was a previous outing that Kumas had where they had been encouraged by his velocity, but he clearly struggled on Friday starting the second game of that series. Kind of where do the Gamecocks go going forward with their pitching rotation, with the injuries they have right now and the way that their rotation's shaping up?
Well, I think they have to hope that Kumas can regain his form and that you can stick with, you know, the rotation that won them a national championship last year, which is Roth, Kumas, and Colby Holmes. I still think that can be a very successful rotation. I mean, they've got other options if they need, but I think that you know, that makes sense to me. I mean, to me, the question that I have is, you know, how their lineup is going to shake out. I mean, whether those guys are going to, you know, especially the freshmen that we've talked about so much, you know, Pancake and Griner and, you know, English. I mean, will those guys be able to carry the load? I mean, I don't know what your impression was from the one game you saw, but you know, that to me remains the question mark about South Carolina, and we'll see. Down the stretch, if it gets answered. I have a lot of confidence in that coaching staff and the veterans in that program. I have a feeling South Carolina is going to be just fine, but whether or not they're a national championship caliber team again remains to be seen.
Yeah, I think you're right. They're awfully young in some important places, and I see the talent with Grayson Griner and Joey Pancake, but there's some real significant issues there. Grayson Griner, it's close to having a real issue in terms of his throwing, just getting the ball back to the pitcher, Aaron. I don't know. I guess you watched one of the games on ESPN3. I mean, he gave up a delayed steal or two against Furman. I mean, I guess SEC teams are going to take advantage of that as the year goes on if he doesn't get over that. And, you know, he was overmatched by experienced good pitching the whole weekend. And then Joey Pancake, I mean, I think offensively and confidence-wise, that guy belongs in the SEC. I mean, he's a really talented player. You know, there were two plays in Thursday's game where you could see the issues that scouts had, where scouts weren't even sure if he could step in and play shortstop at the Division One level. You know, he's got some similarities to a Drew Meyer physically, but he's not as fluid as Drew Meyer was early in his South Carolina career defensively. And I think, like Drew Meyer, Joey Pancake really trusts his arm and has some playmaking ability at shortstop. But he's going to be error prone. He's not going to be Haney, and he's not going to be – it was Bobby Haney, right, 2 years ago? And it's, and then last year's shortstop, Peter Mooney, he's not those guys. He's not as reliable. And the bottom line is Scott Wingo is not walking to that door. Eric Payne's got some offensive upside, but he's not Scott Wingo defensively. And Mooney and Haney are not walking to that door defensively for South Carolina. And so defensively up the middle, they're very young, very inexperienced, and it showed on Thursday. I think it's shown a little bit all year. So, you know, we'll see how that is going forward. I still think South Carolina has the potential to be an Omaha team. They do not have the same feel as their last couple of clubs, where you just knew that they were such an efficient defensive team. They do not show me that this year. There's not. I don't think there's ample evidence to say that they're going to be an efficient defensive team on the infield like they were the last couple of years. Meanwhile, Florida, you know, the reason we ranked them number one in the preseason was their talent, but also their depth and their experience. That depth is being tested. It's already been tested with Carson Wentz's injury. Jonathan Crawford is stepping forward very nicely, filling that role as the number three starter. Now they have the injury to their third baseman, Josh Tobias. And they clearly have some issues with their outfield defense, Aaron, where they even put Cody Dent in the outfield this weekend for the first time. What's kind of the prognosis for how does this team react to the loss of a starter, albeit a freshman, in Josh Tobias at third base? Kind of what's the shuffling going for them? Because it feels like they can't just stick Dent at third base because they need him to be that super utility guy.
Yeah, it hurts on the heels of losing Tyler Thompson to that torn ACL. Now you lose your third baseman as well as your center fielder. So I think they have to basically put Dent at third. I mean, you like him as a utility guy, but I think, you know, I mean, they got to the championship last year with Dent basically being their third baseman. I mean, they shuffled it around a lot, but, you know, he played a lot of meaningful innings at third base. You know, he's not a great offensive player, but he's athletic, and, you know, he's a good defender. And then I think you have to put Jonathan's brother, in center field, and you play the freshman Justin Schaefer in left, or you play, you know, Vikash Ramjet out there, you know, who I think could handle that. I mean, he's not going to be a standout, but outfield defense was never Florida's strength. I mean, if you were looking for a chink in their armor, that was always it.
Right.
And it'll just be amplified a little bit more now. So
I gotta say,
this team isn't flawless.
Yeah, the back half of their lineup, Aaron, is pretty pedestrian. I mean, Fontana, Pygott, Tucker, Zunino, Johnson, that top five that they ran out in the third game of the series, that's a really nice top five, left, right, you know, great table setter, balance, experience. Then you go Gashu, Turgeon, Ramjet, Dett. I mean, obviously Ramjet hit two home runs on Friday, and he's capable, and there's a lot of talented freshmen there, and then Dent. But, you know, this is not Stanford's lineup. I think beginning of the year, we thought Stanford was a better lineup than Florida, but the gap wasn't that great. I think the gap keeps getting bigger because Stanford does not have as many pitchable guys as Florida does.
You know, I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, you know, Gushue isn't a name per se yet, but I think he's really good. I think he can really hit. He's only a freshman, but, I mean, you know, he's a tough out, and he's got some power. And obviously, I like Ramjet. I mean, it's another guy that I think is formidable as a lower half of the lineup guy. I mean, I don't think, you know, I mean, Dent to me is the only guy down there that seems like is really an easy out.
I'm not saying those guys are easy outs. I'm saying they're not as good as Stanford, where Stanford's five-hole hitter is Kane DeKroger, you know, unsigned second rounder of high school, a junior, versus a freshman switch hitting interesting player. Tanner Gashue is talented, but I'd take the Kroger. Austin Wilson hitting seventh, you know, for Stanford, and the depth they have down there, Lonnie Coppola hitting eighth. I mean, it's a deeper lineup. I'm not saying Florida's lineup stinks.
Yeah.
I'm just saying I'm comparing it to Stanford because these are the top two teams in the country.
Right, right.
And I think we already thought Stanford's lineup was better, but now I think the gap is a little bit wider because of this attrition in the Florida lineup. So I'm not trying to harp on the
I think that's fair to say. Yeah, Yeah. I would agree with you then.
Okay. It's the baseball. That's what we're going for. The Baseball America podcast with John and Aaron. Aaron, the rest of the SEC, you're going to wrap up pretty quickly. But Arkansas keeps impressing. They win another series this weekend. And if this one, they go on the road, beat Mississippi State despite the explosion by my boy Hunter Renfro, one of the all-time personal cheese balls. And then Kentucky goes on the road and wins a series, albeit at Tennessee, not the most talented team in the Southeastern Conference, but I think we think well-coached. And what was the next most interesting series in the Southeastern Conference to you?
Well, Auburn, to me, is I think, a very interesting team now. I mean, you know, coming into the year, we had, you know, kind of low or at best modest expectations for Auburn. We didn't have them as a regional team. I still don't know if they are a regional team or not, but you've got to start taking notice of them. You know, they've now won back-to-back series at Ole Miss and home against LSU. They're winning a lot of close games. You know, their run differential isn't going to impress you too much in conference, but, I mean, they're interesting. They're very athletic. They have some arms. I kind of like the bullpen with the veterans back there with Justin Bryant now recovered from Tommy John surgery is you know, kind of occupying that closer role for them. You know, and you've got Slade Smith back there and the lefty Corey Lucky. It's kind of a nice little group. And it's not your typical Auburn team, just like it's not your typical LSU team that you think about. I mean, Auburn, you think about it as a team that's going to sit back and wail away and hit a bunch of home runs. I mean, 2 years ago, I think they hit something like 130 home runs with that, you know, SEC West championship team. This team doesn't have much power, but it has a lot of speed. And, you know, they could be dangerous.
And, Aaron, the schedule actually sets up pretty well for Auburn when you look at it. They've obviously opened – first of all, they've done it on the field, so they've won their first two series. They've got Mississippi State at home, and they're at Alabama, but Alabama is certainly a series that's winnable for Auburn. Their last two series are at Arkansas and home to Florida, but those are the two best teams of the Southeastern Conference, and they play them last. So they have a chance to get some confidence. I mean, obviously there's no easy series in that league, but I think I'd rather have Auburn's schedule where you've already won a couple series, you've already got some confidence, and you'll have a chance to put together, if they continue playing well, a pretty nice record before you run into Arkansas and Florida, which I think if you go 2-4 in those six games, you'd be very happy if you're Auburn. So
yeah.
John Pawlowski's got to be happy about that. I guess the other flip side of that is LSU. I mean, have we got a decent read on LSU? First time they go on the road and they struggle. I mean, App State lost a series this weekend to Elon, so they're not in the rankings. But we're always going to kind of have that App State series in our heads this year for the Tigers. This doesn't seem like LSU's terribly offensive.
No, they're not. And, you know, we didn't expect them to be. We thought this would be a team that would win a lot of games because of their pitching and because, you know, they've got some experience in the lineup and you expect them to string together some offense, but they're not going to blow anybody's doors off offensively. This weekend, I think it was, you know, was it three more one-run games in that series? I mean,
yep.
There's going to be a lot of close games for LSU. They need the bullpen to be reliable, which is why, you know, I thought it was encouraging that Kurt McCune came out on Sunday and picked up the save. Maybe that's the role for him, and maybe that, you know, that kind of answers one of their questions is who finishes games. I know they like Nick Goody, but McCune seems like, you know, if he can be that guy back there and you can have Goody as your setup man, I like their staff a little bit more.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I like the idea of McCune finishing out games in the Southeastern Conference. It doesn't seem like a team can succeed in that league without a really reliable closer, not to mention a whole bullpen. I mean, obviously, last year we saw the three teams in Omaha with either super deep bullpens or the best two-man bullpen you ever saw, like South Carolina had. So that certainly helps. Let's switch gears a little bit. We teased it last week. We're going to do a little bit more mid-majory podcast this week. Let's shift to Conference USA, Aaron, where they just started conference play this weekend. We have obviously two teams in the top 25, Rice, which we've talked, I think, a decent amount about this year. Correct me if I'm wrong, we had no Austin Kubica this weekend, right?
Well, he didn't pitch. I think he basically just got moved out of the rotation, and they're giving him some time off to try to figure out what's going on with him.
Right.
So, you know, we'll see what happens there. But, you know, it's nice that Andrew Banak has pitched well in the midweek, and, you know, they could just slide him into that Sunday role, and he pitched well.
Right. So that's, you know, I tells you a little bit about Rice, and we had a great conversation last night with former Rice pitcher Joe Savory. He was a guest on the Baseball America show on Sirius XM last night at 7 o'clock Eastern time. We do that show every week. And Joe was awesome talking about Coach Graham and Rice and that Rice perception. So that's going to be a story for down the line. With the perception of Rice pitchers, I think he said it was get your money and get hurt. He said is what he heard all through pro ball. And now, of course, you know, he's picked his velocity has gone back up as he's gone back into playing infield. And he made the major league last year. So after switching, after giving up pitching in the first half of last year and just being a first baseman, it was a great story, and we'll have more about that. We've written about it, but we'll have more about it coming up at baseballamerica.com. But the big series in the league, obviously in the Conference USA this weekend, was the East Carolina Central Florida series. They like to be called UCF and ECU. And Aaron, I guess you know, basically UCF kind of held serve, winning the series at home, not quite able to get the sweep. What do we learn from this weekend series? Is this pretty much just what we were expected? Any surprises out of this weekend series for you?
I wouldn't say so. I mean, I honestly thought that both teams would pitch a little better. So I guess that's a little bit of a surprise. I mean,
yeah.
Friday's game was a very well pitched game, and the last two games weren't. And you know, interestingly, you know, you think of Central Florida as an offensive club, John, but their pitching so far has really been a little better than their hitting, you know, and they got their bats going a little bit on Saturday, and certainly they've got a lot of offensive upside. You know, they have a lot of veterans now in that lineup, but you know, they're still trying to figure out the back of their rotation for one thing. I mean, they moved Eric Skoglund, the freshman, now into that Sunday role this week. You know, entering the weekend, they weren't sure who they were going to use on Sunday. And you know, that didn't work out. I mean, he might be the guy, him or Garrett Nuss, another freshman.
Right.
I mean, they've got some options. They like Ray Hansen, the job that he's done. But you know, they need to figure that out. Ben Lively is really maybe the big X factor for UCF. I mean, he threw that Saturday game not well. He's been a little up and down for them. I mean, he's got some of the best stuff on that staff. He probably has the best arm on that staff. But he hasn't been able to put it together consistently. You know, the consistency is what he's still looking for. And you look at East Carolina, you know, I think their weekend staff had been more consistent coming into this weekend. And then Tyler Joyner did not, you know, he did not pitch well on Saturday, took the loss. And I think he went like three innings. And on Sunday, you know, Jarrell Cotton did pitch well. So, I mean, that's been a real bright spot for them. I think there were some questions coming into the year, you know, how ready that guy would be for Division One,
right?
And he's proven to be very ready. I think he's 5-0 now.
I think you're right. No, I think that's a great read on that series. That Central Florida, we kind of thought would be maybe a little bit better. We thought they were going to be a more of an offensive club than they had shown. The fact they kind of broke the bats out a little bit against a pitching staff that we think is pretty good at East Carolina, I think is certainly a good sign for UCF and the rest of the league, Aaron. I mean, how, I know it's early. How's this league looking in terms of you know, its overall picture, its overall strength at this point in the season? I mean, it's early, but Southern Mississippi seems like, you know, that freshman class, you know, very talented freshman group, third-ranked recruiting class in the country. They haven't quite blown anybody's doors off, but they played a pretty tough schedule. Feels like it's probably a four-bid league kind of way it's looking. Maybe they have a shot at more?
I don't expect that. In fact, if I had to pick today, I might even call it a three-bid league because, you know, I'm a little concerned about Southern Miss. I mean, they lost a series to Murray State last week at home. You know, they've been up and down. I mean, they've got some losses that make you shake your head a little bit. They'll probably wind up getting it together. I think that this is, you know, one of those young teams that could peak down the stretch when it matters most, or they could wear down the stretch. You don't ever know when you're leaning that heavily on freshmen.
Right.
And sometimes even really talented freshmen do wear down the stretch. It's just, you know, the rigors of the Division I season takes its toll. But I feel pretty good about East Carolina. I do think they're going to be a regional team. Obviously Rice and UCF. After that, I think it's, you know, it's open for an interpretation. I mean, Tulane had a really inexplicable loss this weekend against who was it, John? Was it UMass?
I wish I could remember.
It was UMBC. It was UMBC. That's a game you shouldn't lose. So Tulane got off to a decent start, and then they kind of hit a little bit of a wall. They lost that series at Wichita. Now they've lost they lost the game at UMBC. They did win the series, but I don't know about their team. I think Tulane, Southern Miss, UAB maybe. Those teams will have a shot at making a regional run, but right now I don't feel great about any of them.
Yeah, it's really interesting to me that Southern Miss. I mean, this is kind of a what if. You can play the what if game all day, but two thirds of the rotation is at Bellevue at the NAIA school, and Jeffrey Thompson, and I forget the other right hander's name. But their freshmen are doing exactly what we thought they'd do, as well as Connor Barron has hit. And Mason Robbins, I mean, those guys are just raking. I mean, those guys are really hitting the cover off the ball. But like you said, their inconsistency, I mean, just losing those two pitchers, I think it just really made – when you don't have great pitching, that's what makes you inconsistent. You just can't win – but so many high-scoring, those kind of games are just too hard to be consistent that way. Another kind of similar league is the Big West. And the Big West, Aaron, is kind of – the Conference USA has kind of turned into Rice and everyone else over the last few years, and the Big West has kind of been the same way. It's pretty much Fullerton and everybody else, with the Irvine, I guess, being the strongest, is a stronger consistent two in the Big West. Then I guess they're kind of analogous to Southern Miss. Both teams have made one College World Series trip in recent years, and fairly consistent regional or even super regional clubs. And right now, it looks like in the Big West.
I think both those teams have gone to regional. At least 6 years in a row. For Southern Miss has been longer than that. So I mean, those two programs have been very consistent, solid kind of number two programs in those leagues.
Right, and then it seems like this year in the Big West, you've got Fullerton, highest ranked team, no other team that's ranked this year. But Irvine and Cal Poly both they have. I don't know what their RPIs are, but in terms of what kind of teams they are, these are both regional talent clubs, right?
I think that's fair to say. I mean, coming into the year, I was obviously really high on Irvine. I had them as my preseason Omaha sleeper, and I don't know if if that's going to happen or not. I mean, there's another team that's had some losses to make you wonder. I mean, they lost the home series to Washington back in week two, which is an improved Washington team, but that's a series that if you're Irvine, I think you have to win, especially that early in the season against a colder weather team.
Right.
They're not, again, I mean, this is a team that's not an offensive juggernaut. They've got some nice veterans. I really like DJ Krumlick and, Jordan Fox and Tommy Reyes, some of these seniors. You look at their roster, John, and even on the mound, I mean, I think they pitch pretty well. I like some of their arms. They don't have any really big arms.
Right.
I mean, it's a lot of, mid-80s, high-80s guys, pitchability guys, change-up guys, and they're solid guys, but there's not a huge margin for error with Irvine. They're going to beat people because they're well coached and they have to play and execute at a high level. They haven't been terribly consistent with that so far, but they did sweep Dartmouth this weekend, heading into conference play on a little bit of a high note. We'll see how that works for them. But I mean, I think Cal Poly probably has a little bit more firepower. In their lineup, and Cal Poly has had some nice weekends. I mean, you talk about a common opponent. Cal Poly won 2 out of 3 against Washington,
right?
Rather than losing 2 out of 3. Poly, I think swept Loyola Marymount in a 4-game series early on, which that LMU team is all right. I mean, they're they've got some really good young talent, so that's a nice series win on the road for Poly. The Mustangs lost 2 out of 3 at Minnesota. So to last week, close series, they're dangerous. And I think that both those teams are regional contenders. This probably ends up being a no more than a two-bid league, honestly, with the way the RPI is.
Okay.
In that league. I don't think you'll end up seeing three teams, but I think Irvine or Poly, one of those teams should be able to make a run.
Yeah, the thing I like about Poly is it seems like they are a little bit more offensive, a little bit more physical. A guy like Mitch Haniger, who gives them some pop. They have a little bit more margin for error than Irvine. I think Irvine may probably have a little bit deeper lineup, a little bit deeper pitching staff. But it seems like is that a fair read? Pauly's got a little bit more pop offensively, and just has a few more options in the rotation.
I think that is true. I mean, that's the way I would break it down. I mean, I like, you know, typically it seems like Irvine is able to get a little bit more out of what they have than Pauly has. I mean, I think Pauly's had some talent over the years and just has gotten some bad breaks, and they've had injuries here and there, and they've gotten snubbed by the committee, and it's just, you know, it's been difficult at times for that program. But you know, this year I do think Pauly has more pro talent than Irvine, and ultimately, you know, I'm not sure which one of those teams is better. We'll see once we get into conference play.
And that starts this weekend. And meanwhile, Cal State Fullerton, Aaron, rolling along in some ways, but still only 14-8. I mean, it feels like this is a team that's really going to have to get it done more with effort and execution than overwhelming anyone talent-wise. They're not far and away ahead of Cal Poly and Irvine, are they? It feels like they're better, but not worlds better.
No, that's right. They're not. I mean, you know, they've got the best player in the league, Michael Lorenzen, who, you know, has the best arm in the league out of the bullpen, and that experiment has worked very well for them. I think he's got five saves now or six.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, he comes out there just blowing smoke, and of course he makes their whole team go offensively, and is a great defender with a strong arm in center field, and you know that's a great piece to have. But you know, you look at the middle of their lineup, and I saw them on Thursday against Oral Roberts, and you know, you've got little Anthony Hutting at what, 5 foot, maybe 5'10", and
right,
and hitting cleanup for you, and you've got Anthony Trajano hitting, you know, it was 5'8", maybe 5'7". I mean, that guy's hitting 4 or 5. I mean, they got these tiny little guys in the middle of their lineup, and it's, you know, Richie Pedroza is about Chris Cates plus 2 inches, maybe. I mean, he's a tiny little guy. I mean, I love Richie Pedroza. I think he's an exciting, you know, fast twitch kind of athlete, but it's not a physical team. I mean, Carlos Lopez can really hit. I like that guy quite a bit. He's just a line drive machine, but even he's not going to hit for a lot of power. You know, I mean, they were kind of joking up at Fullerton on Thursday that their fans, you know, they get excited for a ball that reaches the warning track. You know, you just don't see a lot of home runs in that league, period. But especially at Fullerton with this team, the way they're constructed. So, you know, they're one of those teams that you watch them, and I think I said this in the chat last week, and they kind of look like an average team. You know, they don't look special, but at the end of the weekend they've won 2 out of 3, and they played a really tough schedule. I mean, that 14-8 now is, you know, it's impressive when you think about the fact that they went to Florida, one of only two teams to beat Florida this year. They went to Texas A&M, which I really like A&M's team. You know, they played TCU at home, and you know, TCU is banged up and has struggled a little bit, but it's still a great series. And I mean, it's been a good schedule. They find ways to win. They do have, you know, a really good Friday guy that you can trust with Dylan Floro, guy who's just always going to be around the zone. I mean, he's not real different from Adam Plutko. He's just a, you know, at UCLA. I mean, as far as you're looking at guys on the West Coast, number one starters, those guys are pretty comparable. I mean, they're both kind of 86 to 89, you know how to pitch, command guys. And, you know, I think Plutko has more upside, but you know, the question with Fullerton is the rest of the staff. You know, they've got freshmen now going the next 2 days with Kenny Matthews, who's really exciting, but is a guy that has to be, you know, I mean, he's going to have his ups and downs. I mean, he's basically a guy that they just got so much life on his ball that he doesn't know where it's going. So he just throws it down the middle, and you know, it'll run away or it'll run in on hitters, and he doesn't know. They just call a fastball right down the middle and see what happens. I mean, that's great that he's got such life. He's clearly talented, but I mean, that gives you some cause for concern down the road. How is this going to really work?
Yeah, I mean, they're a fascinating club because they have, like you said, in terms of their resume, it's as good a resume as really any. They played a very strong schedule, and they have been competitive with all comers, which I think is a testament to Rick Vanderhook, a guy who waited a long time to be a head coach, and doing something with his opportunity. So kudos to him and to the Titans. It's the Baseball America podcast along with Aaron Fitt. I'm sorry, I'm John Manuel. The podcast is sponsored by ATEC, the baseball training machine company. ATEC is committed to delivering tools to coaches to help train and develop players Visit atechsports.com to learn about training machines that can help make your practice more effective and efficient. See training tips and practice drills from Vanderbilt head coach Tim Corbin and more on atechsports.com. Atech, win every practice. Aaron, let's shift gears to the Big East. We had a Big East team ranked to start the year in Louisville. The Cardinals open conference play this weekend with a sweep. They've won, I think it's 8 straight, and they're kind of following a different script than we thought they would follow to start the year. We really like their pitching, and we still like their pitching talent, but they've been a little bit more offensive than I think we probably thought. I mean, they're hitting .330 as a team, and we knew they'd steal bases. I mean, my boy Adam Engel, who was I think I saw him run a 6.760 last year at the Coastal Plain League All-Star Game with 18 bags already. Stuart Imes, the veteran, producing the power in the middle of the lineup. This is like a team that's living up to preseason expectations, just doing it in a different way.
That's a good point. You know, they have been pretty offensive, and I agree with you. I think that was the question about this team, and I know that, you know, Dan McDonald coming into the year was excited about his team's offensive ability, but you know, they had some questions to answer. I mean, they needed to prove it. And Ty Young, you know, is a guy that has been very talented there that they expected a lot from as a sophomore now, and he leads the team in hitting at .429, and he's a really good athlete and just a nice piece for them. And you know, they on the mound, I still think that, you know, the depth of this pitching staff is a real asset. You're right. I mean, it seems like they've been even better in the lineup than they have on the mound so far.
Yeah, and that league, the Big East, has been – it feels like that league's off to a good start, even though St. John's hasn't quite lived up to maybe some preseason expectations. At the same time, I mean, can you really peg this league down the line? Is there – who's the most likely team to get a second bid out of this league? Because it really doesn't feel like the Big East is ever going to be – more than a 2 or 3 bid league max, and this year it feels like it's more of a 2 bid league.
Yeah, and that's if somebody upsets Louisville in the conference tournament. I feel like St. John's put itself in a little bit of a hole early. To me, St. John's feels like the only other team that has, you know, really regional caliber talent and could have competed for an at-large bid if they'd gotten off to a better start. Maybe they will get hot, really hot, and they will make a run in at-large. But right now, I mean, I don't think Notre Dame or South Florida, those teams that, or UConn even, those teams that are 3-0 in the league, those don't really strike me as at-large kind of teams this year. I think St. John's has at-large ability, but they're going to need to get really hot in order to do that.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the Fighting Irish. Obviously, there's been some tumult there, a couple coaching changes the last 6-7 years. It hasn't been the same, really, since Paul Mainieri left for LSU. And yeah, the Fighting Irish does have a win at LSU this year. Pat Connaughton back from the basketball team with some fanfare last week. Had a bunch of strikeouts. I think he struck out the side in his first inning. What are things looking for there? What's the upside there with Mick Aoki and that club? Is there? What do they have to do? What would have to happen for them to challenge for an at-large bid?
I mean, you know, I just don't see it. I mean, I feel like they're a scrappy team. That's, mixed teams are always going to be one of those hard-nosed teams that, you know, play a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. I feel like, and that's what this team feels like to me. But I mean, the talent, I just don't think it's there yet. I think it's going to take a little bit more time for them to get the talent going to a point that they can compete for an at-large. I mean, on the mound, I think, Will Hudgens has been really good for them. I mean, that's a guy that's racked up the strikeouts and gives you a really reliable starter. But, the rest of their rotation, I think, is just okay. This is a team that offensively has struggled at times. I mean, they went down to Texas State and got shut out for, what, 2 or 3 games in a row down there.
Right.
They're off to a decent start now, 15-7. It's probably a little better than I thought they would be, but the verdict is still out. I'm not sold at this point.
I like the fact that Connor Biggio is getting some playing time. He leads the team in stolen bases. That's, of course, son of Craig. You got some named players on this team. We got a Biggio, and then, of course, you have Connaughton, who played basketball this year. And now that the basketball season's over, we'll see how long that can how long he can contribute to the baseball team. I just think it's really, really hard to play two sports these days, Aaron, and he's giving it a whirl. It's a Baseball America podcast with John and Aaron. Before we log out of the podcast here, Aaron. Some impressive performances over the weekend. You blogged a little bit about – there's some pieces of news we need to make sure we get to. You blogged a little bit about two things this weekend, Michael Wacha for Texas A&M. You talked how much you like Michael Wacha and the Aggies, and then the Colin Moran injury with North Carolina. Let's first go on the positive tip. Talk about Michael Wacha from a draft perspective, as well as from what it means for a Texas A&M perspective. Because we talked about this, you know, the note that stuck out to me in reading what you wrote about Wacha and then in the top 25 tracker is, you know, four straight complete games for Texas A&M. I mean, how does Michael Wacha avoid the fate that befell Barrett Laux, that befell Josh Stinson? I forget the closer last year.
John Stilson.
Thank you. That befell, who was the freshman left-hander who ended up getting hurt, never came out? David Hale? Ross Hales.
Ross Hales, right.
Yeah, Ross Hales. What, you know, what's going to keep Michael Wacha from avoiding that fate? Can him and Ross Stripling keep up under the pretty heavy workload they're going through right now for Coach Childress? I mean, that is the reputation for Texas A&M's pitching staff and for Coach Childress's pitching staff back in Nebraska as well. How good was Wacha, and do you think he can hold up, keep this performance going the whole season going into the draft?
Well, those guys have been very efficient, you know, which is one reason they've been able to go deep into the game. I mean, both Wacha and Stripling this weekend, you know, it's not like they were dealing with real elevated pitch counts. I mean, Wacha had a perfect game into the eighth inning, so, you know, he clearly was mowing them down. You're right. I mean, there's a little bit of a history there of Texas A&M guys throwing a lot of innings, and some of them have gotten hurt, you know, and that's something to keep an eye on. But, you know, Michael Wacha physically is a horse. I mean, he's 6'6", and, you know, he's a strong guy who's got great stuff. I mean, it was 91 to 96 this week. I mean, kind of, he peaked at 95, 96, pitched kind of 91, 93, held it deep into the game. You know, he's got a filthy changeup, of course. You know, he's able to mix in the slider against right-handed hitters, and he'll drop in a curveball for a strike early in the count. And, you know, I think it sounded like even against Kansas State last week, you know, he didn't pitch that badly. He just kind of had one inning that got away from him, really got away from him. You know, the stuff was good. I mean, he's a winner. You know, I like that team a lot. I like him and Stripling. You know, Stripling, of course, with that power curveball that he's got, such a great pitch. And, you know, he's a first senior. I mean, he's as good a senior, I think, outside of Michael Roth, I guess. I mean, he's as good a senior as you'll see out there on the mound. You know, a guy who's pretty firm. I mean, 89, 91 with that really good curveball and
right.
Good changeup. I mean, he's that 1-2 punch is fantastic for them. And I do like their bullpen. I mean, they've got a real weapon back there with Kyle Martin, that power submarine guy.
Yeah.
You know, they like Daniel Mengden, the freshman, quite a bit. Esteban Uriegas has been a key piece for them. You know, those are kind of the key guys. Gandy Stubblefield's got a big arm. You know, the freshman, a lot of talent there. So I think with their bullpen, they should be able to keep those big arms in the rotation fresh.
Is catcher kind of the big question mark for them? Because I know they would like to try to have Mengden do both, but that's really not plausible. You know, Cole Langford hitting 0-65. Something to have a little more offensive option in Troy Stein. How do you see that shaking out for the Aggies? Is that going to be an issue for them going forward?
They kind of thought coming into the year that it would be a catcher by committee deal. They
okay.
had four guys actually that they liked, and you mentioned two of them, and Mitchell Mao is another one, and Mengden. And you know, I think they realize that Mengden, it's most important for him to be their kind of one of those bullpen anchors for them, and so they're not gonna try to put too much strain on him by making him catch as well. But you know, they like all those other guys. I mean, they're solid defenders. I mean, offensively, of course, you know, they haven't gotten a lot out of them, but you know, they don't need a lot out of those guys
right.
offensively. I mean, this team, I think, is a pretty good offensive team with a ton of speed that really is a major weapon. You know, it's like, I think A&M's best teams have really caused a lot of havoc in the base paths. You know, you think back to, you know, Blake Stauffer in his prime when he had his great season, and you know, they had Brandon Hicks running around, and you know, all these guys that just forced the action, and Ben Felton, they're stealing all those bases. I mean, this team to me has that kind of feel offensively. They suffocate you a little bit, you know, and I think to me, when I look at the Big 12, You know, and I've seen a lot of the Big 12 so far. I think A&M is the clear-cut favorite. I think they're a strong favorite. I like their team a lot better than Texas and Oklahoma and Baylor. You know, I've seen all those teams too, and I just feel like the Aggies are more complete than any of them.
I think you're right, Aaron. I think that was our feeling coming into the year, and that has been reinforced by the early season returns. Last thing here on the podcast is in North Carolina and North Carolina State play tonight. They finish up their series. Or their series, as I feel like I'm compelled to say after seeing Ray Tanner. So the Tar Heels and Wolfpack, it's already gotten a little heated. ESPNU tonight, game three of a series. And North Carolina, everything has changed, I think, Aaron, in the ACC race. You have Florida State just going out there. They got their first loss of the year, but they're just kind of taking teams apart. pitching better than we thought they would, and the offense kind of same as it ever was. James Ramsey having a tremendous year for them. But now you have last year's National Freshman of the Year, Colin Moran, go down for North Carolina, hitting 389, 458, 556. Clearly the engine that drives that offense, and now he breaks his hand and is going to miss probably, it sounds like, around a month. You know, what does this mean for North Carolina going forward and for the rest of the ACC race? It really feels like, to me, it makes Florida State the prohibitive favorite going forward in the ACC regular season race.
I agree with you. I really do. I thought it was pretty close between those two teams anyway, and now you take away North Carolina's best player for a month. You know, Florida State is playing at a high level. You know, I watched I DVR'd a couple of their games against Virginia last weekend and watched them this week, and just came away really impressed with, you know, with their whole club. I mean, they
looked
you
really
know,
good
they,
in that series.
They really did. I love the infield. All those veteran guys with Jace Boyd and Devin Travis and Justin Gonzalez and Sherman Johnson. Those are four experienced players that are, you know, winning players. That you know, they're just perfect classic Florida State players. They work counts and they got some pop and they really wear out the gaps and go the other way. And it's just and then you throw Ramsey out there and Their pitching staff is it's sometimes, you know, they surprise you a little bit. I mean, it's not big stuff, but I like the way their bullpen is structured, actually, with Robert Benincasa back there and Hunter Scantling. You know, they've kind of built this pitching staff inside out a little bit with your experienced guys at the back and your freshmen at the front. But they like their freshmen, Charlie Lee Brandt and Mike Compton. And those guys so far have pitched very well for them, and they've been a little bit poised beyond their years, maybe. So I think they can win a lot of games with those freshmen in the rotation because their team is awfully complete.
Yeah, and Robert Benincasa probably having about as good a year as any closer in the country right now. I mean, no earned runs, no runs allowed, period. 23-2 strikeout-to-walk ratio. And again, James Ramsey, I mean, Mike Zunino's having an amazing year, and he's a catcher. But James Ramsey, 427, 564, 890. I mean, it's hard to have stars in college baseball who have these crazy years. But Mike Martin has had more guys have these kind of years. And James Ramsey's having a Stephen Drew as a freshman or a Buster Posey as a junior or J.D. Drew as a junior kind of year. He's just having he's just a monster. I know I'm leaving some guys out, but he's unpitchable right now. Like, just watch that Virginia series. I mean, yeah. Virginia tried a lot of different ways to get that guy out here and didn't seem like they had a consistent answer.
Yeah, he had three homers this weekend, one in each game against Wake Forest. It's a good Wake Forest pitching staff, too. He just, you know, that's the thing, is people kind of wondered if scouts, I guess, wondered if Ramsey was a little bit of a tweener. I mean, the power, you know, how is it going to play? So far, it's really played. He's got 9 home runs now, I think. You know, and he just does everything on the field. I think I heard this weekend that he's the first player ever to wear the C on his chest for Florida State. You know, they just love Ramsey and the energy that he brings, and you can just tell how he's the general for that team. He makes sure everybody is in the right spot, and he's just a lot of fun to watch. You know, he makes plays defensively. He makes plays on the base pass. He certainly makes plays with his bat. It's just a great player.
And Virginia, to its credit, rallies from that series loss to the Seminoles, that sweep last weekend. You know, sweep Clemson, starting to have some real questions about whether Clemson's, you know, they're kind of in the Vanderbilt boat right now. 11-11 overall, 3-6 in the league. You know, Maryland got off this great start, but they haven't gotten things going in conference play. You know, right now Georgia Tech really struggling, Aaron. Just defense, and they've moved Luke Bard in the weekend rotation where he threw well this weekend, but the Yellow Jackets drop all the way out of the rankings this week. It's looking like a top-heavy Atlantic Coast Conference. Florida State, North Carolina, Miami. And I think NC State, especially if they can win tonight, really setting itself up to be maybe not just a regional team, maybe a regional host if they can finish
right.
Top three of the ACC, Aaron. I mean, that seems plausible.
Yeah, it does seem plausible. I agree with you. I think the league is, as you put it, I mean, there's some teams there in the middle with some real question marks. You know, Virginia has been up and down. I mean, I like Virginia okay. I like Clemson okay. But, you know, neither of those teams feel to me like a regional host this year. I mean, maybe, you know, it's early yet. It is
right.
Still, you know,
March.
It's starting to get toward the middle of the season. But, you know, there's still time for one of those teams to get hot and you know, put together a hosting kind of a resume. And certainly we've seen them do it before with those coaching staffs. But these are different teams, you know. And I think NC State might be better than both those teams. Right now I think they are.
I think so, too. We still have a lot of – I still think NC State has some bullpen issues. You got to get Chris Overman back the way they want him pitching velocity-wise. They used the freshman Orwig Sunday with the game on the line. That was a surprise. I saw him throw a bullpen earlier this year because it was only his fourth outing. A very difficult situation to put a freshman left-hander in, fourth outing of his college career on the road in a tie game in the ninth inning. But that's what Tom Holliday chose to do, and Elliot Ava, their head coach, and they lived with it. Gave up a game-winning hit to Tommy Coyle. So I think tonight's going to be an exciting game, Aaron. Looking forward to going to that one. And, you know, now we can focus on baseball here in the Triangle area. Now that both all the talk in this area was an NC State North Carolina meeting for the regional championship in basketball, and Kansas took out both of them. So we can just focus on – I hope that some of the local fans here pay attention to college baseball. How's attendance been at games you've been to, Aaron, this year? I mean, like I was blown away by the 82-42 crowd at the Carolina Stadium Thursday night for the Gamecocks. They rolled out the Garnet carpet for me in Columbia last Thursday, and I had a great time at that game. But amazed by the passion of the fans there in the Palmetto State. What's it been like for you out in California this year, and in some of the Big 12 teams that you've seen? What's attendance been like, just anecdotally?
Yeah, I would call it disappointing, except you have to have some expectations for it to be disappointing, and they just don't get fans. They just don't get fans out here, and frankly, it's a little, you know. It's frustrating. You got Texas A&M coming all the way out here. You got a great weekend for baseball. Friday and Saturday were both beautiful. And I think the Aggie fans, you know, outnumbered the Wave fans this weekend in Malibu. And that shouldn't happen. It's a good Pepperdine team.
I guess Pam Anderson
got a nice ballpark.
There.
She wasn't there. It's crazy, you know. I mean, come on. I'm so tired of the excuse. There's just too much else to do in Southern California. Give me a break. It's not like people are going to the beach every day. People take the beach for granted. You know, they're not driving into L.A. going to the museums. I mean, what else are they doing? You know, there's people could be doing other things anywhere. You know, come watch some baseball. For God's sakes, we got great baseball out here. I'm tired of these. You know, you get 1,500 fans and it's a great crowd. Give me a break. Come watch baseball.
Aaron Fitt, rant of the day. I am happy to give up the rant of the day title that I usually win handily. There's usually not much of a – with Aaron out of the office, there's usually not much of a race for that. So rant of the day, outstanding stuff, and that's kind of what I was almost hoping for, but I didn't get my hopes up. My expectations were low, just like yours for attendance
you know,
out on the West Coast.
Yeah, it wouldn't bother me so much if it weren't for the fact that they've got really good – baseball teams out here. They, you know, I mean, UCLA is number six in the country, and they draw pretty well by West Coast standards, which is to say that they, you know, they get 1,000 fans a game. You know, but I mean,
right.
That's not good enough.
We need to
find some way to get West Coast people to care.
Well, I tell you what, the fans in South Carolina care, and
sure.
I was so impressed, and I've always been impressed by South Carolina's fans and their attendance at the ballpark. And Sarge Frye, I always thought I had a great atmosphere, and I always kind of enjoyed going to Sarge Frye. But Carolina Stadium, I mean, that's a I cover games. I work games at the AAA level. That's a AAA caliber ballpark. It's a big time ballpark for baseball and a great atmosphere. And I'll needle Andrew Kiddick. They need to make the players available to the writers before they do the video, or maybe in conjunction, or maybe they do the video before they make them available to the writers. But still fun to cover stuff there. And had a great talk afterwards with Ray Tanner. So much fun. I have so much respect for Coach Tanner. And and then again, after the emotion of that night, and there, I think it just told me so much more about Florida and why I'm very confident in Florida being our number one team, because they were like professionals, Aaron, and went out and won the last two games of the series. So great stuff as always. The podcast went longer than I wanted it to go, and I apologize for that. But thanks for all your time today, Aaron. And thanks, everybody, for the download. The Baseball America College Podcast is sponsored by ATEC, the baseball training machine company. At ATEC, we're committed to delivering tools to coaches to help train and develop players. Visit ATECsports.com to learn about training machines that can help make your practice more effective and efficient. See training tips and practice drills from Vanderbilt head coach Tim Corbin and more on ATECsports.com. ATEC, win every practice. Aaron, where are you headed this upcoming weekend?
I think the main attraction for me this weekend is going to be St. Mary's is in town at LMU. I'm going to go see Martin Augusta on Friday night and Patrick Wisdom and Troy Channing. I like that Gales team, and looking forward to getting a look at them.
I believe you're going to go see Kyle Bearclaw, too. Is that what I hear?
Kyle Bearclaw, yeah, that's another one. He's gotten off to a pretty good start, I believe, for St. Mary's.
Yeah, I almost threw his name in earlier when you were talking about college senior pitchers, but I held off. One of the all-time personal G's balls. You should, if I were out west and I went to go see Kyle Bearclaw pitch, I would go interview him and present him with a bear claw before the game that he could eat afterwards, because that's just a tremendous name and been a fun career to follow. On that ridiculously bad pun note, I want to thank everybody again for the download. Thank Aaron Fitt for the time. Thanks our new podcast computer, getting some bugs worked out still here, but Source Interlink Media and Grind Media coming up with the new infrastructure here at Baseball America. So our first time here on the new podcast computer. Hope it sounds good. And we're going to, I think, have more new equipment coming forward at Baseball America, both in terms of helping us to be more consistent with video and helping take Baseball America across all the different platforms like we've been trying to do the last few years. For Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you next Monday on the next Baseball America College Podcast. So long, everybody.